Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen, with the dark shadow of the Empire rising to take their place. This message is a warning and a reminder for any surviving Jedi. Trust in the Force.
They've outgrown their age of rebellion, dulled the Empire's edge, defeated Imperial generals and the Pirate Queen's dredge. They've been soldiers and scoundrels, what's there left to be? How about lost acolytes looking for their force and destiny? There's a seer, hermit, investigator, and teacher. Better watch your back or a vibrarang's gonna reach you. Will his team find the light or will darkness win the day? Find out with the heroes of a Hadean way.
Previously on Heroes of the Hadean Way, our heroes arrived on the scene of a crashed ship, ready to help, but there was little they could do. Kesh and Koba investigated, finding the inside trashed, staged to look like a pirate attack, but Koba could see through the lie. Someone was looking for something specific. Up front, Hillary kept watch over Alzil, the lone survivor, and learned that the attackers had not found their quarry. With Alzil's word and some help from Skip, he uncovered a secret compartment and an item no one expected. A Jedi holocron. But what would they do with such a dangerous trinket? Find out on this week's episode, the start of a long, long trail.
Welcome to Heroes of the Hadean Way. This is a live play podcast that explores published adventures and the Fantasy Flight Games Star Wars RPG line. And this is our prelude, episode 3 for Chronicles of the Gatekeeper. And I'm Ben, the GM for this adventure.
And I'm Ren, and I play Skip Gobi, the Kaloran Secret Hermit, and my weapon of choice is a tranquilizer rifle, because I don't really want to hurt anyone, but I suppose my primary weapon of choice is some good old gumption. No, that's not a good weapon? All right.
Somebody be playing too much of that Western Hollow game again.
I reckon.
I'm Kesh, the Trandoshan Mystic Seer. And my weapon of choice is lately a blunt instrument.
What is it? Your wits?
No, a stick.
I don't know. I like.
No, I kid.
I like his answer better. I kid.
Wait a minute.
I am Hillary Alaruk, and I do not use weapons, typically. I suppose... Damn it, I'm a father, not a fighter.
And I'm Koba, the Doug Sentinel. My weapon of choice is the Vibrorang.
Really?
Yes. Some of us can manage it.
I've not heard of a Vibrorang.
Exactly.
That sounds kind of made up.
They're real.
Okay, Batman.
To learn more about our characters, we get one hero to ask another a question. This time, it is Kesh.
Well, Koba, I was going to ask you one question, but in light of your intro, given blasters are prevalent and highly effective, why use vibrarangs?
And what exactly are they?
A vibrarang is... it's like a vibroblade. But it's curved and you throw it. And if you throw it good, it comes back. That's what it is.
And why do you prefer it?
There's several reasons.
And they are.
Never did trust blasters. You know. It was a hard night on Malastair. The kind of night where sin clings to your clothes. I was at a bar, looking for a contact. I got into this improvisation without really having a place to go, and it's not working out so well yet.
No, bar looking for a contact.
Yep, keep going.
blaster scanners at every door. Turned in, obediently turned in my little holdout blaster. Kind of thing I was carrying because it was concealable. One thing led to another, basically, and brawl started. People pulled weapons. I went in with my fists first. You know, you get a lot of upper body exercise when you walk on your hands all the time.
Is that what happened to your face?
The sound. the sound of my knuckles cracking against somebody's jaw was deafening as any blaster fire, because it reached deep into my soul. Every blow I landed ate away at me. I'd never be quite the same person.
So why isn't your weapon of choice your fist then, and not the barber?
I'm getting
the thing
to
that's made up.
Shh, Skip. I want to see where this goes.
Anyway, at fast forwarding to the end, since someone is impatient, you know, when I finally followed the trail left by my dead partner, who I was going to tell you about, but, you know, time, I guess. This gank assassin who had been trailing me, who I also was going to tell you about. He liked vibrarangs. I dodged quite a few of them by then. You know, one got lodged in something, didn't go back. I grabbed it in a moment of panic. Threw it at him. It took him down. I delivered a one-liner. What goes around comes around.
Ooh. Nice.
Basically, it cuts things from far away really good. And you can use it as a knife if you need to. And nobody really expects it.
I love
Gozo. I regret asking so much right now.
And let that be a lesson to all of you about asking me questions.
No,
I am
no.
So glad you asked.
Me too. I'm thrilled. Koba, you will have to tell our next story at the campfire.
That's it. From now on, if we ever have any reason where we're supposed to tell or ask questions or whatever, we all have to ask Koba. That's it. That's the only person.
Am I just getting every question for the rest of the season?
I, for one, would like to hear more about the skank assassin.
I won't survive too many more of these questions.
I want to hear about the tragic death of the sidekick.
I will die of old age.
What kind of partner do you suppose he had?
They were probably really feisty and probably got on their nerves.
But still, they were friends.
Yes.
Yes.
And like, Corsa, where Koba's like this gentle soul inside this prickly little spiky outside.
So, like a space pineapple?
Yes. Like a Meluron.
Or one of those.
Are you done?
Probably not, but we should wrap this up.
That was amazing.
Yeah. To reiterate for our wonderful listeners, what is our destiny pool?
It's three
is.
Light and four dark.
Yep. We've been spending.
The six of you are piled into the cockpit and around it, with Skip holding up a holocron that you've all realized is a holocron after people told Kesh. There was two questions at the end of last episode. One was, how do you do something with it? And the other one was, does anyone know something about this Volk character?
Works for me.
I guess since Volk was mentioned right at the end, can I roll something to see if I've heard of him?
I go with, well, Streetwise does kind of work. Knowledge Underworld also works outside of Rim, where you can get into most of the knowledges.
Yeah, it'll be Streetwise if you give me the option of Streetwise.
Yeah,
my cunning is just better than my int.
Streetwise, they're a of that sort, yes. Okay, Volk is not exactly the most common name, but he's also not exactly the most well-known yet.
Sure. Big galaxy.
I'm going to start off with it being a hard check, and I'm going to spend a destiny point to upgrade it once.
All right. So, streetwise roll. I'm rolling yellow, green, green, green against a red and two purples.
Oh my god.
Well,
not well.
I sure
what you
don't
know,
know
about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Volk person might not be good.
I can see that red dice have
decided who they hate the most already, because I got one failure and two advantage, and I will point out, the second roll in which I've had a red die, I have a second despair. So far I'm 2 for 2. Rolls that could generate a despair and rolls that did generate a despair. There were couple in there that couldn't have, and they didn't have, you know. We'll wait and see if D1 just adds one in there someday when there shouldn't be a way for it to be there. So yeah, failure with despair.
But you do have 2 advantage in there. So I'm figuring that you do know that Volk is a trader in antiquities and is somewhat of a person who would, one might say, raid tombs and acquire things for people, and is generally dealing with some very untoward sort of people.
Is he, I guess I would, do I know if he's more of a fence or more of a...
Volk is the person who gets it and then will either fence or courier it to someone.
Sure. All right. Is there anything in particular that happens because of despair, or are you just going to kind of bank that for later?
I'm somewhat banking that for later and somewhat just...
Despairs on knowledges sometimes are best executed with later misinformation.
Yeah, that's kind of how I'm going to go with it on this one.
I've heard the name, but never dealt with him. Types like him, though, not usually the kind that you want to sit down and have a drink with.
Throughout Koba's and Kesh's search, they found that this is a ship that does look like they've got several crates that had been smuggling some form of artifact. There are some pretty cool and engraved weird metal staves. There were some of those vibro-rang things Kobo was talking about on a wall display. There's even a Vorian-style fedora that has the two holes for their horns so that they could get it down over their horns. Like, it does look like there's a fair amount of interesting cargo here that was passed up by whoever had boarded. So, like, that sort of do go along with what Koba knows of Volk. This does look to be like one of the couriers who would be meeting with Volk to ship some of their stuff that they have found. There are the 6 of you in the cockpit who are standing around the holocron, and like Shags and Scoop are leaning up against hallway walls as they're watching, just sort of wanting to see what the heck's going on. The question I've got is any one of you wanting to attempt to open or activate said?
Kesh would like someone to try.
Well, I think Skip's still holding it, correct?
Yeah.
Nothing has changed in that.
No. Skip is holding it out for everyone's inspection, to my understanding.
Open it.
Really?
Let's see what sort of wisdom Jedi left.
Wait, you're gonna let me open it?
I don't care who does it.
Oh, yes. Then Skip is gonna start messing with it immediately. Needs no provocation.
So in that case, and this is for everyone who's trying to open it, it will be a hard knowledge check.
Oh.
Lore check?
Yeah, knowledge lore, sorry.
Okay.
Now, for everyone who successfully identified it, sorry, you get an upgrade.
Who didn't successfully? Oh, right.
Yeah, it's okay. I am by no means the only person trained in knowledge lore, as I found out on the last roll.
Are we all going to roll individually?
I think it's to see who wants to try.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so I'm trying it first, so... Yeah.
I'm not going to help, like, physically, but I'd like to at least lend a boost or something to Skip, because I'm staying with my patient on the floor.
Are you going to offer me some advice?
Yeah. Or I'm going to try, but I'm, you know... No, don't try that way, you know, try that way. Like, I don't know, I'm going to say something that makes it sound like I know something. Like, I identified the holocron, so I've got to know something about it. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
This was hard?
Yeah, it is hard. So 3 purple. Well, no upgrades for the difficulty. You get an upgrade for the...
I was going to say... Okay, yeah. Thank you. I was sorry. Like, wait a minute, I'm confused. Yes, okay. All right.
So I give a boost, I guess.
Yep.
Awesome.
Well, all right. And then Skip gets two successes and two threats. As Skip manipulates this box.
As you try to access it, very abruptly the holocron hums and rises a few centimeters into the air as it separates along previously invisible gaps and realigns itself into a 8-pointed diamond. A blue holographic image appears of a hard-shelled insectoid of some bulk, dressed in Jedi robes. It looks out and says, "Greetings, I am Frodo Baz." And the insectoid hologram starts to evaporate faintly.
Not again.
What?
Did that tiny figure say not again? As it vanished.
I think someone's trying to talk to us.
Maybe? It's a box.
Is it a communication device? I thought you said it was like a holo novel.
I knew what it was, but I don't know what it does.
You're the one who said it was like a holo novel. I just kind of agreed.
A blue holographic image appears of a fairly youthful, dark-haired human, male, with the robes of a Jedi. The hologram nods to Skip and smiles. "Greetings, students. I am Soldier Ward. Well, his memory, at least. I am the gatekeeper of this holocron, which Soldier Ward created to store his knowledge of the Force and the ways of the Jedi."
Well, hi there. You probably can't tell I'm talking back, can you? All right.
Hello. It is nice to meet you. Might I get your name, O Padawan?
I'm going to look at Hillary. Look!
Hillary shrugs like...
Holocrons have some rudimentary AI they can interact.
Well, I'm Skip. This is Gudge. Points at the little pet on their shoulder.
What does the little pet look like?
Has this not come up yet?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so, no.
Well then, whoops. Okay, let me get back. Okay, all right. Skip's animal companion is a small, sort of yellow and orange creature that generally either sits on their shoulder or sort of glides just like an inch or two above their shoulder. It has fins. It kind of looks like a tiny little manta ray, but kind of squish-faced, and has some gills, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense because it is...
Is this a manta pug?
Not in the water. No. Ben wrote down the species name that we invented, and I did not write that down, so I need to find that info. But, yeah.
It's like the shark fin.
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, yes. So then Skip will say that, and then kind of hold the square out in front of Hillary. Still hold it, like kind of cupping the square at this point in both palms.
Hillary waves at one of his little hands. Hello, I am Lord High Lord Hillary Ulrich. Nice to make your acquaintance.
And this is, just immediately like then hovers the thing over, or not hovers, that just like shoves the thing in front of Koba.
Koba.
Back to Skip's face a little bit. Koba doesn't talk all that much unless it's about, you know what, never mind. And then puts it in front of Kesh.
Kesh.
Kesh also doesn't talk a lot, but that's fine.
We're interested in learning from you, Gatekeeper.
That is truly wonderful. And from what I gathered from what was just said between Koba and Kesh, a holocron is one of those things where you can best think of it as a receptacle of Jedi lore and lessons, with teachings that include the secrets of the technology it uses, but much of the knowledge the holocron contains, I can only teach it to those who show they are worthy. such as what you have done here.
What do you mean worthy? Are you referring to the gift?
Yes, I do believe that is one way that you could put it, that this is a great, true gift that the six of you do have.
How can you tell?
You see, it is a part of the base technology of holocrons. There is a organotechnological matrix within me that allows limited sensory input, and...
That's fine. I'm good.
Thank you for your curiosity.
It's limited, but I am rather curious at times. Hillary looks at everyone else and gestures to his patient. Was there anyone else?
Was there anything? Was there anyone else? What?
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me, soldier. We're in a bit of a situation, and I would like to just redirect the focus for a moment. My patient here is in poor condition, and if there are any others, we should get them to help. He's looking at Scoob and Shag, who actually would recognize Soldier, wouldn't they?
Shag's is just completely gobsmacked. Like, just mouth open, completely unbelieving that a holocron was created by Soljo or that it's here. Scoob is kind of smiling and it's like, this could end well. Also, they're using a rag to clean their hands.
If nobody's going to answer, Hillary is going to look at Koba because he knows Koba made it further into the ship and he kind of like, he doesn't really have eyebrows. He raises his eyebrow nubs, the ridge, I guess. Like, kind of, were there any survivors?
If there were any other survivors, we would have found them.
So, perhaps we should take our new portable friend here and go.
I just want to point out for a second, you understand taking this means that we may be putting a target on our backs. Not just from whoever brought down this ship looking for it, but any number of other people you don't want to be on the wrong side of, not the least of which being the Empire.
But the potential of what we can learn is worth that risk.
I don't disagree, I suppose. I just don't want anybody to walk into this without understanding.
Cash turns and looks at Skip.
Skip, who was is again still holding the cube, but was holding it and kind of scooched down so that Hillary could talk directly into it at Hillary's height, is just kind of not looking at the cube anymore, but is looking at the conversation that is going on between you two with a not quite a smirk, but like a just really enthusiastic kind of smile. Yeah.
Okay, and what about you two? Cash looks at Shags and Scoobs.
Well, like Peepity, I'm here for how the Force will take us, and the Force has delivered us into your company, and if Soldier Ward, even an echo of the Jedi Knight, is here for, like, our edification, like, how could we ever pass that by? It's just so far out that we would ever be able to do this.
Well, for a start, how many people have you killed? How often have you been shot at?
Who keeps count?
I think you keep count of rather a lot of things. Seeing as your goddess is called the Scorekeeper.
Well, it's not a count per life sort of thing. The circumstances matter a great deal, and I've been reset to zero more than once.
Yeah, it's like a combo system. It's like how many you kill without getting hit.
Like in a time limit, maybe.
Koba's not wrong about there being danger ahead, but I think we have a balance of skills here. Speaking of, do you think one of you two could see if your force will help you repair any damage done to this ship? It could be useful to, well, have a method of leaving this planet other than public transportation.
Wait, are we just gonna take the ship? But they like
most of the crew is dead, except for what, that one? And I don't think he'll really mind if we take him elsewhere for the moment.
Oh,
I'm back to, since you know they've pointed out, you know, they're talking about Alzil. I'm gonna go back to kind of focusing on their wellness.
It looks like Alzil is most likely to pass within the next hour or two.
Was there a room that was not disturbed, or that could be set tidy?
Everything got tossed pretty good, but I'm sure you could clean some of it up if you really wanted to.
If we could clear a bed for Alzil, I will stay with him.
I'll see to that.
Thank you, friend.
And as Shags goes to help with Kesh and Hillary getting Alzil into one of the beds and resting, Scoob looks at the computer console that has been torn out and just sort of shakes his head.
As an actual mechanic, we probably discussed Scoob so much.
Don't you know what the heck is going on with these things? There's a connectors back there that you can actually just pull apart if you twist them. And, never mind. Yeah, there's like some tools back there that we can get onto. And I'm pretty sure that the engines are okay. We just got to do a bit of digging. That's going to take some time. Unless your Trandoshan friend is able to, like, do some of that more movering thing that they did with the Wii one. That could help out a bit. But, yeah, we could probably get the ship up and going. Probably won't take too much.
A lot of what they say doesn't make a whole lot of sense to Skip, and that's pretty clear because Skip just kind of slightly nods and starts to look like they're starting to get antsy and looking around the room and just like anything else. And then when you say the moving thing, they just kind of look even more visibly confused and just sort of stare at them.
Oh, like, didn't you see? Like, your Trandoshan friend was able to, like, move their hand, and then like the little dino person was able to get up onto the ship. Like, I thought it was there just clear as day, but you know how it is.
All right.
I like how Skip just kind of accepts it. Like, yeah,
clearly
sure.
Still looks a little confused, but okay.
How many sessions can we go before Skip sees Cash move something? That's what I want to know now.
Hopefully several.
What do you think? Can we make it to Act 2?
Maybe. So Scoob will head towards the engines and start working on getting them up and running. Because, like, beyond digging out some of the dirt, there's not too much wrong with the ship. It just didn't have anyone at the controls.
Okay. I mean, all of this, Hillary is literally just going to stay with Alzil. So all right. Y'all do your thing.
After Cash helps, you know, make a room tidy for Alzil and Hillary, She'll head back to see if the engine room needs any assistance in terms of like muscle. That's about the best she can offer in terms of trying to get the ship up and running. If she is asked about, hey, like just lifting the ship up, she will admit, I've never lifted anything anywhere close to this big.
Oh, like, yeah, the ship itself is, like, that's a pretty huge thing. But if you want to try doing something smaller, like, say, some of the dirt that's around the ship that's on the ship, the way that the ship is sort of like nose down and all that, it would be really handy if you were to like get some of the dirt off. Like, we do have shovels. If you'd be more comfortable with like a shovel and just sort of hands, sort of a more trenching type shovel.
Now, this is something I can do one way or another.
Yeah.
And she'll go and outside of the ship to go start dealing with the dirt.
Okay.
If you like, she would attempt to use her gift first to move it out of curiosity of nothing else before resorting to the shovel.
All right. If you want to do a roll, absolutely. Hmm.
I rolled two light side pips, so I can only spend one of them right now anyway. I don't have any ability to upgrade this, but I'll go ahead and spend that, and Cash will start trying to move the dirt with her mind.
I'm figuring that like off of one roll, you're probably not going to be able to move all of it, that some of it's going to have to be like just good old-fashioned shovel dirt moving. But I am sort of thinking that standing over the cockpit, you're able to clear off the dirt that's around it, kind of in a very Rey in the Last Jedi style, like just sort of expanding up and then moving forward.
Okay. Yeah, we see like the dirt go flying out a little bit away from the ship, and then we can hear the sound as she's letting it go, and it's hitting the various leaves and mushrooms, and it's almost like it would be hailing here or something, so the particulate.
Okay. My other question would be, so we've got Hillary staying with Alzel, and Shags is also staying there. We've got Kesh up top digging the ship out a bit. What's Koba doing?
What's the situation with the vehicle we got here in?
It's fixed. It's just a hover bus. Are
there any other people on it?
No, it was the six of you on the hover bus to get out here. And it's been pretty much the six of you for like the last week.
Yeah. So there aren't any supplies on it?
There is the supplies. They're pretty much run down, but there's like another day or two worth of supplies on there on the bus just for general camping type. Like what you guys used or were intending to use tonight.
Yeah.
As well as all of your clothing and belongings for this trip.
If there's not something that somebody needs him to be doing otherwise, Koba will probably be trying to retrieve anything of value either to him personally or just as supplies. Since I'm guessing the freighter does not necessarily have entirely fresh food stores or whatever.
It does look like they've been traveling for a bit, but it does look like it has most of its supplies there. It does look like they're relatively recently restocked, but like about a third of them got trashed.
And he's using the opportunity to just kind of be like on alert and keeping an eye on the surrounding area.
Yeah, fair. So yes, Shags and Scoob will be sticking around on Felucia.
Yeah, then I won't, Koba won't raid their stuff. Though he may still recover, like, his belongings and that of the other player characters, just in case anybody has anything important. I know that a lot of that stuff may just be kind of like vacation clothes, but, like, you know.
Take Scoob a couple hours to get the ship back up and functioning and sort of thrumming there. Koba's getting the party's stuff from the ship. One of the things that Shags and Scoob had done while everyone else was sort of searching was taking care of the bodies, essentially laying them straight in the forest. The one question I've got is, so we've covered Hillary, Koba, and Kesh. What's Skip up to while that's going on?
Skip's still holding the square.
Are you talking to him?
I just kind of had this very, very stupid vision of Skip going around and exploring the ship and just talking to it.
Well, no, that absolutely makes sense to me.
He's just chatting with the Jedi memory.
Yeah.
I like it. I love Skip. I want to hang out with Skip.
It seemed funnier 15 minutes ago when I decided that was what Skip was doing. No,
it's good. I like it.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of NPCs we are taking with us, I mean...
Yeah.
Ward is one of them.
Skip's not an NPC.
Hey!
No. I mean the holocron.
Sure. Good cover. Good cover.
I'm just going to go ahead of here.
No. I do.
Can we plug Ward into the ship? Can we L3 Ward?
No, you cannot L3 Ward.
That's probably for the best.
There's a really nice cup holder up front that the holocron will fit in.
It's for square cups.
Okay.
So my thought is that while people are fixing the ship and, you know, doing hospice care,
mm-hmm.
Skip would probably putter around like the pilot area, talking to the holocron, probably telling the holocron everything that they saw earlier in the sort of mushroom forest, and kind of just like a recap of the weird visions.
Okay.
And explaining how excited Skip is about what they saw, because there were those bridge cities that looked really amazing, and you know, just talking the ear off of a freaking holocron, because everyone else went off to go do other stuff and Skip likes to talk.
So is there any questions that Skip would have wanted to ask of our wonderful gatekeeper?
Honestly, not yet. I really feel like maybe, like, I have it in my head that, like, Skip is talking and saying everything that happened. And, like, maybe even the holocron says, like, do you have any questions? And then Skip's like, well, you know, and then just keeps going on about stories. Like, because I don't want to ask any exposition of it without everyone else around. As the meta reason, but. Funny reason being just that Skip is just talking to it.
Fair enough.
Because Skip is also very used to talking to things that don't talk back, like their pet. So.
That totally makes sense.
That's what Skip's doing. That's it. Nothing important.
I'm just sort of figuring that then we get the sort of montage of Shags and Hillary looking grim next to our wonderful Devorian. Yeah, and Scoob is running between the two sets of engines, making sure that they're functional and getting the repulsors up and running so that they can get out and cash out on the outside, getting rid of the dirt that's actually on the ship, or at least enough so that there's actually a line of air between the ship and the dirt. Koba's lugging stuff in and down that hatch, down the ladder. Now that they know where it is, there's no accidents of falling or anything like that. It takes a fair amount of time, but then, like, yelling to Skip, then Skip's able to yell out to everyone, because Skip's out and around, to hold on as the ship rises up on its repulsors and puts down its landing legs. And then the ramp actually goes down into the trench. By this point, the smoldering that's behind the ship is now out.
Once we've gotten to the point where the ramp is down, that would be, I guess, when Hillary would want to work with Shags to take the bodies to a place to rest. So, I mean, once it's open, we have that access to carry them down. I don't know if there's a hover dolly or something. It is a cargo ship. So he would do that.
Yeah, like a hover pallet jack or something.
Yeah.
I like trying to imagine what a hover pallet jack actually is.
Well, in my mind, it looks like a pallet jack, but instead of when you pump it, instead of it just going, it activates the repulsors.
Yeah. Like, can you make it repulsor higher? Does it make other things?
I feel like, yeah, you'd have that limited control over it like you do a normal pallet jack. You have 6 to 10 inches.
That's kind of what I've been always envisioning.
It also means it would be a lot of fun to skate on. Not that I've done that ever.
Yeah.
Never ran into a wall.
All right, so the ship is upright, at least.
Yeah, the ship is now up, actually able to take off when it looks to. The cargo bays have been kind of cleaned up a bit, or at least everything's off to the sides. When Kesh is able to come back in, I do want to get a force roll from Kesh.
Okay.
One dark side pip. Do it.
All right.
I don't know what you're doing, but do it.
I don't know what I am doing. I don't know if I need to flip a point or if this is just determining whether whether there's light side or dark side energy around me.
You smell funny.
I'm going with that there is a dark metal staff that it looks to be slightly shorter than a quarterstaff, and it has a lot of intricate designs on it. You can pick out a couple of them being Trandoshan, but there's a lot of other designs on it as well. And it's got these weird little claw, like four-fingered claw things at either end.
She'll walk over to the arrangement, and she looks down at her cane carved from piece of bone of some large creature, and then looks at one of these staves, and we'll pick one off of the rack and swing it around a little bit just to sort of get a feel for it and get a closer look at those markings.
Like, there's definitely some weight behind it. One might even call it slightly cumbersome, but it feels good to swing.
Can I maybe make like a knowledge lore check to see if I recognize any of the markings besides that some are Trandoshan?
Yes. This one I'm going to use a destiny point on.
That's good. I was going to do the same thing.
Let's see if we can confuse it. Ha ha ha.
Done.
Oh, okay. I figured it out.
Sky Jedi's been putting a lot of work into D1 lately. So, All right. So in this case with that, I'm going to go with it's a one red, two purple check. That okay. It's kind of this somewhat esoteric thing.
All right. Do the fact that there are symbols I already recognized assist me in any way?
I will give you a boost for it.
Okay. All right. Two yellows, a green, one boost versus red and two purple. Hey, I succeeded on a thing. One success and two advantages.
Woo!
For the success, some of the Trandoshan writing, this is ancient Trandoshan. Like, we're talking thousands of years old style writing. And in this case, like, there's definitely linguistic drift that has happened over that time. And one of the things you can easily pick out is it says scorekeeper on it, but then it also says protect pack.
I think Kesh probably recognizes those words courtesy of back when she actually served as a priestess for the scorekeeper many, many decades ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Probably some of the older writings and things like that. For the two advantages, do I recognize the origin of perhaps another language or two? Not as in reading them, but as in like, oh, I can tell that's,
Yeah, one of them is Nikto, and a third language is you're only really able to recognize it as an ancient dark writing. You're not quite sure exactly what it is.
Okay.
It looks somewhat familiar, like you've seen it before, you're just not fluent or even like partially passing in it.
Kesh ponders all of this and brings the staff back to rest. About how like high up does it come on her?
Let's see. Kesh is actually pretty tall, but I'm figuring like as it is, it would be a little bit below shoulder height if Kesh was to put it on the ground.
Okay.
And when you put it on the ground, like the four fingers, which are equidistant around, they're metal. They come to what almost looks like a point, but it's kind of rounded. So that, like, one of the things Kesh would obviously try is, I'm going to poke at this metal ground, see if it bends them, and no, it does not.
Well, I'm keeping this. And I think that'll be our scene on that little thing.
So the last two scenes that I'm sort of thinking of is essentially, like, is there any sort of burial or things that you're wanting to say for laying those four to rest?
Hillary would sit, or kneel probably, at the foot of Alzel's grave. He did not get to speak to the others. And, they made, like, I mean, I don't know if you'd call them headstones, but little markers just to note that the graves are there. And at I would imagine Scoob's recommendation, they plant like seeds for each of them.
Mm-hmm.
And Hillary will pat the fresh ground at Alzil's and say, I did not know you, but I will not forget you. And he's actually got tied around one of his wrists just a strap of Alzil's clothing, just as a note to himself. And he's just thinks for a moment and says, if I find them, I will make sure they do not forget you either. And then he'll kind of rock back and just start singing to himself as he looks over the graves. And I do technically have a song, but I'm not going to sing it for you if you don't want me to. So,
what? But Leslie, singing.
What?
It's what you do.
Well, I don't want to take up all the time.
No, do it.
Okay. Because I would say like that could be a good thing to end on.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
Okay. So Hillary rocks back onto his feet because he's kneeling. There's a long, long trail a-windin' into the land of my dreams, where the nightingales are singing round the old moonbeams. There's a long, long trail a-windin' until my dreams all come true, till the day when I'll be going down that long, long trail with you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Heroes of the Hydean Way. You can find show updates on Twitter at The Hydean Way, and you can find me, Ben, on Twitter at Deuterium Ice.
You can find me, Ren, at Atomic Firebird, or on Twitch at make_believe_.
You can find me at Leslie.
Oh, I see what this is.
Oh, I skipped you. I'm sorry, sweetie.
I understand now. You've been skipped for so many years, and now you're just going to take it out on other people.
Retribution!
Excuse me, I'm Skip.
Now I'm just confused.
You can find me on Twitter at 12th Knight. That's 12th Knight with a K. I also have two D&D 5e actual play podcasts. The Glass Dagger can be found at CompleteKnight.com, also Knight with a K. And Omen's Call can be found at OmensCall.com.
Not with a K.
Not with a K.
You can find a very sheepish Leslie at LeslieGS.
And you can find Brandon at Blue of the Kin. I also do a Star Trek Adventures actual play called Endeavor Through the Maelstrom. You can learn more on Twitter at Endeavor Show. That is EndeavorShow.
I'm in it too!
I'm not!
Yeah.
But I'll listen.
These statements are accurate.
We are all at thehydeanway.com, where you can find previous episodes.
And you can also find more episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Plus, you can help us out by rating, reviewing, and subscribing.
We're also on Facebook as Heroes of the Hydean Way. You can holocom us at heroes@thehydeanway.com.
If you like what we do and want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/thehydeanway.
Or you can toss a cred to your podcaster at ko-fi.com/thehydeanway. I put that in the wrong Discord channel.
Where did you put it?
Sorry, Ren. Our DM has a random role. I mean, it doesn't work, obviously, because we don't have D1 in there.
D1 is not part of your chat.
Yeah.
This is like a timeout. I guess I'm a little confused. Are the bus operators going to go back to their bus, or is the implication that they're staying on the ship with us?
I think that they're coming with. They want to see where this holocron leads. And,
okay.
Right?
Since this is a timeout, it honestly is up to the four of you. If you don't want them along, you don't have to. If you want them along, they can come along, but they also, setting up a crew to go on a quest is also kind of their current calling. So.
Right, I was just confused, because I was like, well, why would you go back to the bus if they're going to go back to the bus? So yeah, okay. I'm there now. I was just confused.
Yeah, I do like them as characters, but I think we're a little too early in our party to have two other voices already. That's my main reticence in having them come along now.
I think that's fair.
There's no reason for them to go one way. Like, I don't have a specific reason one way or the other for them.
Were they designed to have skills that we were missing?
Kind of. Essentially, I was designing them basically around this way. You wouldn't have to have a pilot and you wouldn't have to have a mechanic for the ship. Like, they would essentially be the ship crew.
Okay, that's fair.
Okay. Is the ship just getting us to Act 1? Is that the purpose of the ship?
Well, on to Act 2 and Act 3.
Oh.
Yeah, like, the ship getting to Act 1... You would then, because the ship has to get transportation on that planet is a little weird, but ship has to land one place and then y'all have to go overland to getting to the city that you need to.
Okay.
And they would just stay with the ship.
Was a discussion we had like a while ago just that the ship was not really involved in any of the adventure? I interpreted it as we're not going to have a ship.
My intention was it would be almost literally just going from planet A to planet B. Like, instead of using a chartered ship, it was
just transit. Ship. Sure.
Yeah. And until you wanted them in with the group, I was figuring that they would just stay with the ship.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, that's completely legit. My question then becomes, will the bus fit on the ship? It's a cargo ship, after all.
Can't imagine so.
Yeah, it's... The bus itself is big enough... It would be like a Silhouette 3 type thing. Yeah. Like, it's a pretty big bus.
Yeah, this thing's... The ship is on the order of like, the Falcon in size. Yeah. It's not...
That's fair.
It's not a big freighter, a little freighter.
Yeah. If you're to, like, mess around with the insides of it, you might be able to force an X-Wing into it, but that's about it.
Yeah, it'd be one of those things, like, taking a couch into a small hallway apartment and you're... tilting it and twisting it and tilting it and twisting it, like, every 2 inches.
Yeah, you gotta open and close the S-foils over and over again to, like, kinda shimmy the X-Wing. Yeah.
And then there's that moment where somebody bumps the button that opens the S-foils, and then everybody's stuck in really awkward positions.
Yeah.
Yep.
Somebody's like, well, upside down over a wing.
That's where that X-Wing lives now.
Like, if you don't want to have them along, that's okay, too. Like, I'm...
No, that's actually, there's, you make a really good point.
There's getting the ship fixed up and then just plugging in the stuff. That's also okay by me.
So I guess my follow-up question, because I understand they have skills we don't have, but they're skills we don't have because we were told we didn't need them.
Yeah.
So, like, does it matter? I guess is sort of my, like, if they provide skills that we don't need, yeah, I don't necessarily see the sense in having several extra NPCs that kind of serve no function at all.
Also, I have ranks of piloting. Just as an aside.
Okay. Like, in all seriousness, there's no great reason to take them along. If you don't want to, that's okay.
I see the logic on both sides. I'm good either way. I figure just making use of who we had to help get the ship repaired.
Yeah, like, getting the ship repaired and getting it free and clear so that y'all could take off, that's totally okay, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, having reread it, or re-skimmed it, there's no starfighter, there's no space combat, there's nothing like that. So,
yeah,
I think at most it's going to be like a piloting role to land someplace untowards.
Okay, so if Skip can fly, then I think I lean more on the... And, you know, if we have a reason where they want to chill here, then, yeah, not having the extra voices for the moment might be a good idea. Just establish the bonds between these four, and then we'll end up recruiting an NPC along the way. We always do.
Yeah. Well,
we do usually recruit a pilot, though, so we'll see how this goes.
Sure, but
maybe we'll recruit a mechanic.
I will say that one of the other reasons I like maybe not having them from a problem-solving standpoint is that... So one of the things that I have trouble with when there's the NPC who's on the ship set up, and it's fine, you know, when it makes sense, like with Vrebo, because that was a campaign where the ship was kind of important to things. So it wouldn't make sense not to leave it unattended. But like when the ship is mostly just a plot device anyway, if there's NPCs that stay behind, then the ship becomes a solution to problems where it's, you know, we don't have any ship skills. So if we call in the ship to help us, we aren't doing anything as players.
Yeah.
You know?
Fair enough. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense.
So that's sort of the GM's side of the table reason that I like not having too many spare characters that can do that.
Save the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I don't want to like say anything for selfish reasons, but I also had kind of taken a bunch of skills that I thought were things nobody else had, so that I had a purpose. So I have I have piloting, and I have a little bit of mechanics.
Okay, no, that totally fair.
And you have that sweet tool.
Because I was, you know, trying to bridge a lot of
absolutely
things. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, and I incidentally have defensive driving because apparently all Doug are good at driving. That's just what Doug gets.
You know, you grew up in a rough neighborhood. You know, when you got your license, it's really intense.
When on Malastare, when you are born, what happens is all of the young Doug that are born on like the same day or whatever at the same hospital, they're each put in a pod racer.
A pod bassinet.
Yeah. And I think I'll just let you imagine what happens after that. But all Doug characters get defensive driving at rank one just for being Doug. So draw your own conclusions.
Nice. All right. No, that's cool. Okay.
It's weird not having to roll duty or obligation anymore.
Indeed.
Yeah, that is going to be odd. All right,
well, so how does morality work? It's not going to be at the end of every other show, is it?
No.
It'll pop up when it does, right? Like, can you roll for that?
I mean, you roll conflict.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, whatever. You know your words.
Well, yeah.
Obviously can't spell the word writing. So.
Well, I mean, morality is also a thing. Your conflict role then affects your morality. But
there is that.
Yeah.
There is technically a role you could do for morality, but
oh right,
that one we're just skipping.
To do like, if you want to still be like, oh, your emotional weakness comes up next time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So since Kesh got
conflict?
Thank you. I was stuck with dubious nature, and I'm like, that's not right.
Yeah, that would be a great term for a core mechanic, though.
It's probably still too early to roll it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, that'll have to be a little wishy-washy, you know, because the problem is, if you do it after every session, all of us will be light-side paragons before you know it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because right now, we have exactly one conflict on the board. If everyone now rolled, 3 out of 4 of you will be going up whatever the heck you rolled, and one will be going up with whatever you roll -1. Woo.
Yeah, so there's that outside chance that Christine just wouldn't go up if she rolled a 1.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So it is Christine. She might do that.
But even also, still, that's, yeah, like,
Yeah.
There's no point,
basically.
Figuring out the right tempo at which to require, like, the book says conflict rolls happen at the end of sessions, but that's not correct.
Everybody ignores it.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, well, the episode of Tales that you had us listen to for this, I recall you saying that it wasn't going to happen as frequently as the book.
And then also our session 0 around it also said it wasn't happening as fast as the book.